Thanks. Yeah, I've heard a bunch of theories for what's going to happen in these two talks. For example, the Mr. and Mrs. Curve theory. Some people seem to think that, some people seem to think that, yeah, I'm elliptic and Tanya is hyper-elliptic and we're going to stand up here and wrestle. I'm going to present the case for elliptic curves and she's going to present the case for hyper-elliptic curves. But actually, we decided to partition the talks by application area. I'm going to focus on just one problem. What I want is to give users the fastest software for the second step of the Diffie-Hellman protocol. Second step is you want to multiply your secret, figure out your secret multiple of a random point. Now, last year I published very fast elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman software and tried to find the best elliptic curve for Diffie-Hellman in software. And this year I'm happy to announce that I've posted the new fastest Genus 2 software, which you might be wondering, some of you might be asking, how does that compare? How is the fastest Genus 2 versus the fastest Genus 1? And I'm going to tell you in just a moment. Many other of you might be asking, okay, what about other situations? Why did I say software? What about hardware? What about, I'm going to be just doing large characteristic for the best speed in software. What about characteristic 2, which again in hardware is better? What about pairings? There's lots more problems that you might ask, all of which Tanya is going to answer. She's going to be giving you the big picture presentation. Again, I'm just going to focus on one problem of trying to do the fastest software for the second step of Diffie-Hellman. I should say a bit about my motivation for choosing this one problem. What I'm really interested in, the ultimate goal, what motivates my interest in cryptography is internet security, which of course has many non-cryptographic problems, software bugs like buffer overflows. But even if all the software bugs are fixed, we still need cryptography. We're not going to tell users that they should stop using wireless. We're always going to have attackers who are inspecting our network packets and who are faking their own connections, faking their own packets. We need to protect against this. Users are not going to pay for physical network cables, physical security guards watching the network cables. So we always have forgery and eavesdropping, and we need cryptography to prevent that. Now, right now, even though cryptographic software seems to be freely available for all the major applications, it doesn't seem to be used. Users don't seem to be paying for cryptography, even though it's much less expensive than physical network security. Somehow, we don't have cryptography for most web pages. I often ask, hey, why don't we have most web pages, all web pages, being HTTPS? And people say, well, it's a pain to configure SSL and get a certificate set up, and you don't want to annoy users with a, hey, this is not a valid certificate, et cetera, this has not been approved, are you sure you want to connect, and you don't want to pay for a certificate. I understand all these issues, but what about Google? Google has bought a certificate. Google has it set up. They've configured SSL. They're using it for some of their web pages, but not for their main search page. If you go to HTTPS, www.google.com, it'll just redirect you to their non-protected HTTP web page. So why is Google not using SSL for all their web pages? They have it set up, trivial configuration change to use it for everything. Why are users not deploying cryptography? And the answer that I've heard to this, the obvious answer, is that, hey, the cryptography is too slow. Google does not want to pay for the extra computers to run HTTPS. SSL is too slow for them. So this motivates me saying, okay, let's speed up the cryptography, which you don't have to do by getting into the details of, say, elliptic curves versus hyper-elliptic curves versus XTR and all the other possibilities. You can look at the protocols and save quite a lot of time because there's all sorts of stupid protocols out there. For instance, people will often use public key encryption and public key signing. They'll take some message, say a secret key that's going to be used for something, and they encrypt that key and they sign that key. And that's silly because Zheng several years ago pointed out signcryption, which is roughly a factor of 2 faster than doing encryption plus signing. It does not make sense. It's silly to be doing both encryption and signing on the same message instead of putting both public keys into signcryption. You don't have to split your signcryption into a separate encryption that has to deal with unsigned, unauthenticated messages and a signing that has to deal with unencrypted messages. You get better speeds by combining the two problems and solving them both at once. Another example of something you can speed up, whenever you see somebody sign crypting two messages for the same receiver, you have two parties who are doing double sign encryption. There's one message with one sign encryption operation and another message with another sign encryption operation. That is silly because you can just sign encrypt one key and realize that secret key cryptography efficiently splits that one key into two keys that you use to protect two messages. It's much faster to use secret key cryptography instead of using sign encryption twice, as long as you have the same parties. My third example here of an easy protocol speed up is if you find yourself sign crypting a random key, then that is also silly because there's one special secret that is very easy to sign crypt. You gain another roughly a factor of two by switching to this wonderful new protocol that was pointed out recently by some people I never heard of called Diffie-Hellman. And they said, hey, there's this one message. Since you only have to transmit one message, sign crypt one message in light of point number two, there's one very easy message to sign crypt. If your public keys are G to the A and G to the B, then this shared secret is G to the AB, and that one is faster to sign crypt than anything else. You don't need to make a random key. You can just reuse your A and B as the randomness for this shared secret. And that, again, gains a factor of two. I've heard a crazy rumor that this wonderful Diffie-Hellman system, which obviously renders general sign encryption obsolete, along with public key encryption and signing in the traditional form, I've heard this crazy rumor that that was published 30 years ago, but obviously that's not true since we've had many other papers with, for example, sign encryption, which would have been pointless if the Diffie-Hellman system had been known. So you can easily speed up your protocols by throwing away stupid structures. And once you've done that, you end up with the following structure for the fastest way to protect private communication. You have each party has a secret key. Let's say Alice's secret key is A and Bob's secret key is B. Alice, along with her secret key A, has a long-term public key, G of A. I'm emphasizing long-term here because there's other variations of Diffie-Hellman that don't have long-term public keys and that are slower. But in general, each user has some long-term public key, and maybe you want to expire it after a while. That's all orthogonal to what I'm saying. Alice, starting from her G of A, and then Bob takes the G of A, which Alice publishes, and Bob somehow computes G of A, B from G of A and Bob's secret, B. And Alice can also compute G of A, B. And then that shared secret, using secret key cryptography, efficiently encrypts and authenticates lots of packets. That's how we do private communication efficiently, without any protocol stupidities. I have a parenthetical note here that I'm just looking at private communication. I said before that encryption and signing are all rendered obsolete by this, but if you do public communication, then public key signatures are more efficient than what I'm describing here because there's so many verifiers for one message. Verification becomes extremely important and you can get better speed. But for private communication, this is the protocol that everybody should be, and in some cases, people are using. So how do we make this run efficiently? Well, let's look at the bottlenecks. There's three operations here. Alice and Bob take their secret keys, A, and compute G of A, and Bob computes G of B. There's a shared secret evaluation that Alice takes her secret A and Bob's public key G of B and computes G of AB. And that happens every time. The computation of G for key generation happens once for each user. Then for every pair of users, Alice and Bob, Alice and Charlie, and so on, there's this G evaluation, also for Charlie and Alice. So both sides compute this A and G of B, giving you G of AB. And then finally, once the users have their shared secret G of AB, they perform secret key operations for every byte that they communicate. Obviously, the costs here depend on how many users, the total costs depend on how many users you have, how many pairs of users you have, how many bytes you're communicating between those users, and the cost of the individual operations. It's clear that in a big network, key generation is never a bottleneck. If you have a lot of communication between each pair of users, then the shared secret computation is also not a bottleneck. But if you have only a little communication between each pair of users, then the shared secret communication can be a bottleneck. If you have some applications, you have many pairs of users, but the users are not communicating gigabytes of data, and they will be spending more time computing G of AB than using it with secret key cryptography. So the bottleneck in some applications, the problem that I'm focusing on, is you're given A, your secret A, and a bunch of users' different G of Bs. And for each G of B, you want to compute G of AB, multiplying your secret by a bunch of random points. How fast is this computation? Of course, you can choose your G. As cryptographers, we get to design our function's G. Maybe choose elliptic curves carefully chosen, maybe hyperelliptic curves, maybe something else. And then you also get to choose how you compute G. You also maybe get to choose the CPU, but my usual attitude is that users have their CPUs and they're not going to change them, at least not very quickly. So I'm focusing on software speed on the CPUs that users actually have, Pentiums, Athlons, PowerPCs maybe, whatever the CPU is, that's a fixed part of the input to the question of how fast this computation is. We get to choose the G, we get to choose how you compute the G. Now that's a large parameter space. If you go through the literature, even just for elliptic curves, you say, all right, what are all the interesting elliptic curve Gs? All the interesting elliptic curve scalar multiplication functions that people have identified. There's a lot of those. There's a lot of choices to make. There's also a lot of algorithmic choices. So there's a bunch of parameters that we get to play with to try to get the best speed for this computation, and those are not orthogonal parameters. So optimizing turns into something of a pain. Last year, I tried to do this for elliptic curves, tried to say, okay, of all the genus 1 choices of G that we have, what can we do most efficiently? How do we compute by varying G and varying the computation of G, the algorithm for computing G, how can we get the best speed for this computation given the CPUs that users have? And to toot my own horn a little bit, the speeds I got were twice as fast as anything in the literature. It's pretty fast. If you want to look up Curve 25519, you can download it and to some extent use it. It's working cryptographic software. What I'm talking about today is, okay, this year I looked at the genus 2 picture. And again, I've posted software this week which does genus 2 hyperelliptic curves as fast as I can. And the question is that faster than genus 1? How fast can we make Diffie-Hellman, the second step of Diffie-Hellman, in software for today's CPUs by choosing a genus 2 curve? Is genus 2 faster than genus 1? How fast is hyperelliptic curve scalar multiplication compared to elliptic curve scalar multiplication? All right. Well, the answer, actually, before I give you the answer, let me say a little bit about the advantages, just to review. Okay, everybody knows this, but let me specify my field sizes here. Everybody knows the basic advantage of genus 2 is you have a smaller field. As you've been hearing in several previous talks, when you have a desired security level for your Diffie-Hellman system, let's say 2 to the 128, then your elliptic curves need to work with a field of size about 2 to the 256, say, and your genus 2 can work with a field of size only about 2 to the 128. So my comments here are, let's stay beyond this 2 to the 80 security level. I'm a little scared based on what we've heard yesterday, for example, on how quickly people might be able to do 2 to the 80 operations with ASICs and a lot of money poured into it. Maybe some of those 2 to the 80 computations can be done, and maybe there's more improvements in computer technology and computers getting cheaper, and maybe we don't want to stay at the 2 to the 80 or even close to it. 2 to the 128 is enough beyond that, but I don't think anybody's going to be doing 2 to the 128-bit operations. There would have to be a huge breakthrough to get to that, to attack something at that apparent security level. So for elliptic curves, you look around at the different field sizes and eventually end up with 2 to the 255 minus 19 is pretty good. The important point here is it's about 2 to the 256. That gives us about 2 to the 128 security. As you're hearing in the last talk, Pollard's row method takes something like 0.56, was it, times the square root of the field size, group operations, each of which is quite a few bit operations. So this is at our desired 2 to the 128 security level. For comparable security in genus 2, as far as we know, you can make the field size half as many bits, square root the field size. So a field size of 2 to the 127 minus 1 seems adequate. And this is a huge advantage for genus 2, that the field being much smaller allows us to have much faster arithmetic. The field multiplications, arithmetic modulo, say this Mersenne 2 to the 127 minus 1, is much faster than multiplication mod 2 to the 255 minus 19. Compensating for that is a big disadvantage that everybody knows for genus 2, which is that the formulas are a lot bigger and there's a ton more field multiplications. Now, there's a lot of different shapes for elliptic curves, and if you look around at them for a while and evaluate exact performance, then you pretty easily arrive at Montgomery-shaped elliptic curves, y squared equals x cubed plus something x squared plus x, where you want the something to be congruent to 2 mod 4 as small as possible, and on the other hand, you also need your curve to have something like prime order, say 4 times prime or 8 times prime order, and this is about the smallest number you can come up with for a curve mod 2 to the 255 minus 19, where both the curve and its twist have group orders that are 4 or 8 times a prime, throwing away a couple of previous choices that are not convenient. This is the first nice choice of curve, and because the 486662 is so small, it makes the operations faster in a way I'll talk about. The definition of the g of a function here is the usual scalar multiplication x-coordinate. Actually, x0 that I've written down is, to be precise, the x-coordinate with infinity mapping to 0. 0 maps to 0, and infinity maps to 0, and everything else maps to its, everything including 0 maps to its x-coordinate in the usual way. There's some standard base point p, which you multiply by your secret number a, with various technical restrictions on how big A is and what factors it has to deal with the 4 and the 8 that I mentioned before. But okay, this is a very standard choice of function, g of A, to use in Diffie-Hellman. You look at the Montgomery formulas for this, and you see 10 multiplications. For every bit of your secret A, 255 or so bits, you have 10 field multiplications for each of those bits. In genus 2, there's a lot more work. Instead of 10, it's 25. There's a ton of papers. Tanya will tell you all about the history, so I'm not going to review that, but the recent drop in this number is from Gaudry in 2005. He said, hey, you can do these operations more quickly. Here's a particular function, shape of function g of a, for which we can do these genus 2 Jacobian scalar multiplications with only 25 multiplications per bit. But even with all the work that went into that 25 and the previous results leading up to this 25, it's still a lot more than 10. So there's a big disadvantage and a big advantage for genus 2, and it's not immediately obvious which one of those is more important. That's the central question in this talk, the question that I imagine some of you have been asking. For some years now, it's been the obvious question, does the advantage outweigh the disadvantage? Now, you look in some papers talking about this post-Gaudry, and they say, yes. Yes, the advantage of genus 2 outweighs the disadvantage, because that 25 is actually surprisingly small. Compared to the 10, okay, 2.5 times as much work, but the field is twice as small. And you would think that, hey, if you have half as many bits in your field and you use quadratic time arithmetic, that sounds like a 4-time speed-up, or, well, maybe it's Karatsuba for a 3-time speed-up, surely at least 3 times faster for half as many bits in your field. And that means 25 multiplications per bit in a half-size field should be 25 divided by 3 is less than 10. There's a factor of 1.2 here that you would think that genus 2 is 20% faster than genus 1, just based on arithmetic. Must be faster if you have your field being half the size. That's a huge improvement in the speed of arithmetic. The slowdown in the number of multiplications is not as important as the reduction if you look at the actual numbers. Unfortunately, there are lots of problems with this crude analysis of how much benefit you get from genus 2. So I want to do a serious analysis, which consists of, okay, let's actually see how fast these things are in the real world, implement everything, make it as fast as we can. If there's more ideas for making it faster, let's use those too, and then see how fast the results are. And so the answer, actually, before I give you the answer, let me say a little bit about what these formulas are. If you want to actually do this optimization, then, okay, some of you might want to just tune out from everything and wake up when I actually get around to maybe ringing the bell and saying, okay, now I'm actually telling you. But it's nice to actually look at what's going on inside these formulas. I'm just going to give a crude overview of where the formulas come from, give you some flavor of what's going on here. There's much more to say about the algebra, but I don't feel I have a complete understanding of what's going on. And Gaudry's been writing some papers which are giving more of an explanation. A lot of this you can understand from the classical 19th century. You can prove everything from the 19th century theory of theta functions. But all right, let me just crudely say the things that seem most important, realizing that there's a lot more hidden behind the scenes. In genus 1, what we normally do, what Montgomery did was say, okay, we've got some field, which let's assume it's a large characteristic field. I'm not going to think about characteristic 2, and probably stuff I say works for 3 as well, but I haven't thought about it. Let's assume K has reasonably large characteristic, which you want to assume anyway for the fastest arithmetic in software, which again, I'm assuming we're using software here. Then Montgomery specifies elliptic curves of the form I said before, y squared equals x cubed plus a2x squared plus x, which I've written projectively here. I should emphasize, some people find this important, that you have to look at an elliptic curve shape and say, wait a minute, are we actually getting all the different elliptic curves there? Or are these special elliptic curves that might have some cryptographic insecurity? Well, obviously, if you're working over a field of size q, then there's about 2 q isomorphism classes of elliptic curves. So with one parameter, a2, you can't get more than q isomorphism classes. And in fact, some of these are isomorphic to each other. So only about 40% of all elliptic curves over any particular finite field are isomorphic to curves of Montgomery form. On the other hand, that 40%, well, geometrically, you have the whole moduli space. You have every elliptic curve geometrically. If K is algebraically closed, then you do get everything. These are not terribly special curves. They are slightly special. And in fact, the structure here means immediately that all of these curves have, clearly, you see two torsion leaping out at you. And in fact, every curve has at least a 4 in the group order, either from full 2 torsion or from your obvious 2 torsion having a half in it over any finite field. So if you want prime order curves, you have to throw these away. But cryptographically, the benefit of having a Montgomery-shaped curve outweighs the disadvantage of having to have another bit or two in your field to compensate for that extra factor of 2 or 4. Anyway, starting from curves of this shape, which again are fairly generic curves, geometrically it's everything, then we throw away the y-coordinate to get faster arithmetic. Just throw away the y, and okay, this is not defined in infinity, but let me just define x as a rational map that takes x, y, z to x and z, or takes x and y if you like, and just gives you x. This obviously is not close to an isomorphism. This is something which doesn't distinguish between a point and minus the point. So this is giving you the elliptic curve mod plus or minus 1, no longer a group. It does have an action of z. You can multiply by n on this mod plus or minus 1, and that's what you put inside the projective line or the affine line. All right, in genus 2, Gaudry imitates this. He specifies a particular shape for a genus 2 curve, which has, if you write it in the traditional form, y squared equals something, the something is sufficiently complicated that I'm not going to write it down for you, but you can find it in his paper. And then you explicitly write down with some shorter formulas that you can reasonably memorize, you can write down, but I still wouldn't want to copy onto the slide, you write down a Coomer surface, which I imagine without having reviewed the old papers was introduced by Coomer, which has a nice feature. It's the image of the Jacobian mod plus or minus 1. Just like in the elliptic curve case, you take the Jacobian of the elliptic curve, mod plus or minus 1, and specify some rational map to this surface. This is injective. This is, actually, I didn't check surjectivity when I say it's onto the surface, but basically this is 1-to-1 from the Jacobian mod plus or minus 1 to the surface. So again, modding out by plus or minus 1, we can't do a group law anymore, but we can still do scalar multiplication. And it's worth it to mod out by plus or minus 1 for the extra speed. Starting from the particular shapes you have here, you can write down these formulas for scalar multiplication. You can build some rational functions. These are f1 and f2 and so on, depend on the curve. And then these functions, once you've built them, have the nice feature that if you take the x-coordinate of a point q and feed it to this function f sub n, you get the x-coordinate of the nth multiple of q, which you build up in steps recursively in a logarithmic number of steps from the doubling function. You can double the x-coordinate of an elliptic curve point, or same thing for the genus 2 situation. And you can also add 2 points if you know they're different. If you have x of r and x of s and x of r minus s, for instance, if you have x of nq and x of n plus 1q and x of q, then you can compute x of r plus s. For example, x of 2n plus 1 times q. These are not just, there are some functions, but these are surprisingly fast, very fast rational functions. In the genus 1 case, it's surprising how fast these functions are, and in the genus 2 case, it's surprising how fast they are. In the genus 1 case, this was introduced, the these particular fast functions were introduced independently by Montgomery, who ends up getting all the credit, and by the Chudnovsky brothers in a couple of articles submitted in 85. The Chudnovsky brothers didn't realize how much exactly you could speed up these formulas. Montgomery got the formulas down to 10 multiplications, where the Chudnovskys had something like 14, and that's enough of a gap that everybody ignores the Chudnovsky contributions here. In Genus 2, similarly, in the same Chudnovsky paper, you can find the idea of using the same Kummer surface and working with the same x function, but they didn't optimize it, and Gaudry in 2005, last year, realized that, hey, you can actually optimize this to a surprising extent. The functions are only 25 multiplications if you really squeeze out the all the multiplications that you can. To give you the shape of the computations you do here, here is Montgomery's recursion, starting from a point x2, z2 in the image of this x-coordinate map. You can get x4, z4, the x-coordinate of the double of the point, by, well, you do a plus or minus on x2 and z2 up at the top here, plus and minus, and then some squarings. This is evaluating some isogeny, some two-isogeny to another curve, and then you do a few more operations with some more multiplications, getting back to multiplication by 2 on the original curve. Montgomery, apparently, he didn't put it in the paper, but Gaudry tells me that Montgomery said that when he was asked how he came up with these formulas, he was playing around with isogeny. So apparently he had the isogeny structure in mind of decomposing multiplication by 2 into a first isogeny to another curve and then a second isogeny coming back. The fact that you also get a speed-up, dramatically small number of multiplications in the addition operation is something that I don't feel like anybody's explained. I certainly don't understand why there's so few multiplications on the right side here. If you want to add x2 to x3, you want to add 2q to 3q and figure out 5q, at least the x-coordinates, then you feed both of the points through this isogeny, do some multiplication of the coordinates on the isogenous surface, and then come back in this way, getting to the coordinates of 5q, and I don't know what that multiplication of coordinates on the isogenous surface is supposed to be doing. You can verify the formulas. I don't know a high-level explanation of why this works. But anyway, Montgomery played around with this. This is something, the decomposition of multiplication by 2 or multiplication by 3 into factoring that into a couple of easy-to-evaluate isogenies is also the theme of a paper by Dosh, Ikar, and Kohel at PKC 2006, which you can read and get many more examples of this nice kind of structure for elliptic curves. What Gaudry has is the same basic picture for genus 2 curves. I apologize for not realizing the arrow on the left here would be outside the edge of the picture, but aside from that, I believe everything fits. This is the first time in recorded human history when the doubling and addition formulas explicitly, coordinate-wise, for approximately a Jacobian of a genus 2 hyperelliptic curve have been fit onto a single slide in a normal size font. You might think I'm cheating a little bit with the H's here. That's a very simple linear map, which I'll show you in a moment. Hadamard matrix, which is why I'm calling it H. If you want to double a point x2, y2, z2, t2, this is in P3, if you want to double a point on this surface, then you go through the computation on the left, which is square each coordinate, feed it through a very simple linear map, do some individual coordinate multiplications by, what are these, big A, B, C, D, those are surface parameters, and then you square, feed through H again, do another few multiplications by parameters, and there, with very few operations, is the double of your point on this Kummer surface. Similarly, if you want to add 2q and 3q and get 5q, knowing the difference, q, then you go through some very simple computations involving both of them, and you can see the multiplication of one by the other, which is the part that feels weird to me, but it magically works, theta function identities, if you like, and then you end up with 5q at the bottom of the picture. Looking at this, this is a picture you can memorize. This is actually surprisingly small formulas, easy formulas for genus 2 scalar multiplication. Well, here I've shown the 2q to 4q and 2q and 3q to 5q along with q as an input. You can see q at the input as an input down at the bottom right here, the x1, y1, z1, t1, those are the projective coordinates of q, which Gaudry has, of course, scaled to get rid of a multiplication. He's scaled 1 over x1, 1 over y1, 1 over z1, 1 over t1 to have 1 as the first coordinate, and similarly the multiplications by surface parameters have been scaled, so you skip a few multiplications there. All right, what was that H? I said it was a very simple map, and here it is. It's something which I almost could have fit onto the same slide by substituting in the picture here. There's H, just a couple of additions, couple subtractions, couple more additions, couple more subtractions. You look at the formulas for H at the top there, and you immediately see alpha plus beta, just compute that once, gamma plus delta, compute that once, and well, okay, that's what this picture is saying. Total operation count for these amazingly fast formulas is 25 multiplications. Just look for the times parameters here and the multiplications of two variables here, and you can easily count the 25 multiplications and 32 additions, four evaluations of H, each of which is 8 additions. Before I tell you how fast these formulas are, I'd like to have one slide here on what I said before, that you get from these rational functions the nth multiple generically, at least I wrote that on the slide. Of course, this means that you can have some queues where it doesn't work. And there's an interesting gap here between the people doing these computations who say, well, as long as you stay away from infinity and from zero and from da-da-da-da-da, and you never have those coming up as intermediate points, and this is never equal to that, and da-da-da, then you get the right answer, which surely for random inputs, you're never going to bump into a failure case. And then there's these protocol people who say, well, we have somebody who tells us this is how to compute the nth multiple on this curve or surface, whatever, and we're going to use that in our protocol and prove that the nth multiple doesn't leak any information unless somebody can solve the discrete log problem, blah, blah, blah. But the failure cases are things that maybe somebody could trigger by feeding in a bad queue. And this is something where there's really a gap between what people are doing in computations, which is not exactly the nth multiple, and what the protocol people are assuming the computations are doing, which is exactly the nth multiple. And that gap could allow some problems. You've already heard about the problem of validating keys. There's lots of problems along these lines, and it would be nice to give the protocol people a simple primitive, say that we are always computing exactly the nth multiple. You can easily say, okay, going through the proof, here are all the things that can go wrong with computing nth multiples, here are all the failure cases, and you just have to check, is this zero, is that zero, etc. But you can do better. Checking for zero is actually a noticeable time sink, and if you change the x-coordinate function from Montgomery into this x0 that I mentioned, mapping infinity to zero, then you see that actually, through a painful case analysis, all of the scalar multiplication formulas work. They sort of work for different reasons in different cases, but if everything turns out happy if you map infinity to zero. I don't know whether there's a similar tweak you can do to the genus 2 formulas, which makes your multiplications by n always work. If you're interested in looking at this, and actually I mentioned this to Pierre Gaudry, and he said that, okay, he has some ideas, but anybody else who's interested in this, I'm not sure if I want to do anything. I'm sure I won't be on any paper that does this, but if you're interested in fixing this little gap, then ask me, and I'll try to at least get people to talk to each other about it. All right. So how fast is the Gaudry formula versus elliptic curves? Well, let me say before I tell you how fast these formulas are that you can do better by changing those numbers. You saw, you remember from the data flow pictures, okay, just to really explicitly remind you, here's a multiplication by a constant, something that depends only on your curve. And here, a squared over b squared and so on, those are multiplications by constants that depend only on your hyperelliptic curve, on your surface. And you can save time by making those numbers small, or at least trying to make them small. For instance, in the records last year, y squared equals x cubed plus small number x squared plus x. That small number, minus 2 divided by 4, is something that's easier to multiply by than a random 255-bit number. It's much faster to multiply by this than to multiply by a random number. Effectively, Montgomery's formulas have only 9 multiplications instead of 10. To do a fair comparison, well, I won't try to define what fair is, but to ask how fast can we make Gaudry compared to Montgomery, you have to ask, okay, can you do the same thing to speed up Gaudry's formulas? And, well, there's a comment on this in his paper. He says out of the 25 multiplications, as you saw in the picture, 6 of them are multiplications by A over B, A over C, A over D, etc. And those depend only on the surface. If you choose an appropriate surface, then a few multiplications can be saved. Well, how many of those 6 multiplications can be saved? I want to briefly address that and then say the problem with doing this. there were, to remind you, some A, B, C, D, big A, big B, big C, big D. The relationship between those is that the same function H applied to the squares of the big parameters is the little parameters. And then you recall from the picture that the multiplications were by A over B, A over C, A over D, and the squares of big A over big B, big A over big C, et cetera. Which, at least some of these, you could easily make small. You could just choose B to be 1 and C to be 3 and D to be 5, say, and then choose A to be 15, and then you've got A over B, A over C, and A over D being small integers. And their squares are small integers, easy to multiply by those numbers, and then figure out what the little A, B, C, D are. Actually, you don't need to worry about the divisions because, to remind you, these are all projective. You can, the A, B, C, D, and little a, little b, little c, little d, those are projective points, and there's no reason to use the shape that Gaudry said of 1 and something squared, something squared, something squared. You can clear denominators, if you like, and just multiply by B, C, D squared, and A, C, D squared, and so on, and that allows A, B, C, D. You don't have to have any divisibility relationships. You can just choose any a and b and c and d that are small, or even choose a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared to be small. For instance, here's an example where those are small and the little a, b, c, d are small. And similarly, you just scale the 1 a over b, I should have put colons for projective, you just scale the things you're multiplying by to be small numbers. And you have here small a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared, and small little a, little b, little c, little d, which takes all of those six multiplications and replaces them by multiplications by pretty small numbers, small enough to save a lot of time in arithmetic. The six multiplications that Gaudry mentioned, that's what the few multiplications are. Out of the 25, you can make these six multiplications much faster. Actually, you can do even better, as I'll say later. Let me, on this slide, say that you can not even worry about the little a, b, c, d being small. You can just have a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared. That requires a little more playing with the formulas. If you take the coordinates of your surface and square them and then redo the formulas and see, hey, wait a minute, actually the a over b and so on are all going to be squared. This is clear from the original diagram as well. You just rotate the diagram for what you're doing so that you have squarings done before the multiplications by a over b. That turns it into a multiplication by a squared over b squared, saving the time if a, how do I say this, instead of hoping for a and b and c and d to be small, you can just hope for a squared and b squared and c squared and d squared to be small. And at this point, you can just choose your numbers arbitrarily. Choose any big A squared, big B squared, big C squared, big D squared, and any just follow through that H and you get whatever the little a, b, c, d are. And aside from your divisions by 2, which you can clear denominators in that, you have arbitrary choices. We'll give you arbitrary small choices of these parameters subject to that H relationship, which is a triviality, will give you fast multiplications inside Gaudry's formulas. I still have to tell you a way you can do even better, but let me say the problem with these specialized surfaces. If you want to say, okay, I'm going to make Gaudry's formulas faster by choosing my numbers to be small, then you immediately bump into the problem of how do we check that the resulting surface, the resulting genus 2 curve, is secure. Right now, genus 2 point counting records are 164 bits and have a sufficiently painful scaling with the size of the input that nobody has come anywhere near 256. I asked the people involved and they said, well, maybe 200. But can we get to 256? It's a lot bigger. It takes a lot of work to get to a serious security level, 256 bits in your Jacobian. It takes a lot of work to get to that level with genus 2 point counting. There's a big difference between polynomial time and actually doable for cryptographic sizes. Right now, the only way that people have actually written down secure genus 2 curves over large characteristic fields is from complex multiplication, which does not give small a, b, c, d, big A, and so on. We don't have right now a way to recognize that one of these surfaces where you choose the a, b, c, d to be small, we don't have a way to recognize that those surfaces are secure. If you say, I have my favorite field of a reasonable size, and I have my favorite a, b, c, d chosen small to speed up arithmetic, nobody is able to convince you that, yes, that curve is secure. Also, nobody apparently is able to take advantage of the lack of security in an attack, but maybe the attacker does more computation than we do and finds out the primes involved, and then we're in big trouble. Now, my student Nikki Pitcher at ANTS had a poster saying Scope's original algorithm which is the closest analog in genus 1 to what we do in genus 2, Scope's original algorithm is practical for cryptographic sizes, which is contradicting what a lot of people thought about the original algorithm. It's actually surprisingly fast, and if the same speedups can be pushed to genus 2, then, well, maybe we'll be able to reach 256-bit genus 2 point counting, and then we'll be able to choose specialized, secure Gaudry form surfaces. All right, so far I've just counted multiplications. 25 multiplications, we've gotten rid of 6. Montgomery has another advantage, which is that out of the multiplications involved in Montgomery's formulas, 4 of those 9 multiplications are squarings. You can see that immediately from the data flow diagram. And that's a lot of multiplications reduced to just squarings, which are, of course, much faster, say, 2/3 the cost of general multiplications. Now, Gaudry, it doesn't look so good at the beginning. 9 out of 25 instead of 4 out of 9. Sounds like a 80% or so, 100 versus 81. Gaudry doesn't get such a benefit from the squarings. And you might do a more careful comparison of, remember, the 10 versus 25 that we started with in the superficial analysis of our 10 multiplications in the big field for Montgomery worse than 25 multiplications in the small field for Gaudry. And, well, redoing that and taking account of squarings being faster than multiplications, you might say, okay, Montgomery uses 4 squarings and 5 multiplications in the big field, and maybe that's 3 times slower than each operation in the big field is maybe 3 times. Surely it's not that good, but let's do a best possible Karatsuba. Imagine that it's only 3 times worse to do a big field. Then 12 squarings and 15 multiplications in the small field is comparable to Montgomery, versus Gaudry is using 9 squarings and 16 multiplications, unless we can specialize, which of course makes us better, but right now we can't do that for security reasons. This is actually pretty comparable. Okay, having 1 extra multiplication, saving 3 squarings, it's clearly better, but it's such a small gap that maybe other smaller effects completely swamp this. On the other hand, you might say, wait a minute, this 3 times is not realistic. It should be 4 times, and I'm being really unfair to Gaudry's formulas here. I'll come back to that question later. Let me say that in the specialized case, it's even better than this. I said there was one more benefit of specialization. You don't just get rid of some multiplications. You also turn some of the multiplications into squarings. The bottom line here, instead of 25 multiplications, if we can do genus 2 point counting, we get genus 2 arithmetic down to 12 squarings and 7 multiplications in the small field. And that's remarkably fast. What's going on in the middle, if you look at those 25 multiplications, you see that on the left and right of the picture, some numbers get squared and multiplied by a curved parameter versus a multiplication and multiplied by curve parameter. And Gaudry doesn't do those squares. He multiplies u by a over b and then does a multiplication of the result by u and by v, which sounds like a good idea if you just count the total number of multiplications and ignore the possibility of a over b being small. And that's where we get to 9 squarings and 16 multiplications, of which I told you you can get rid of 6 if you specialize the surface. Obviously, you should undo this speed up if a over b is small, then it's better to multiply u by u first, so squaring is fast, multiply u by v, multiply both results by a over b, which without specialization is worse. It's instead of 3 multiplications there, it's an extra squaring. It would be 28 multiplications total, 12 squarings and 16 multiplications. But if a over b is small, then we save 2 multiplications each time that happens instead of 1, which is what gives us 12 squarings, 7 multiplications. Again, this is, if somebody tells me these numbers a year ago, 2 years ago, then I think, wow, that sounds like the elliptic curve operation cost if you haven't put too much work into it. Okay, maybe not quite as good, but these are remarkably small numbers for genus 2 doubling and addition. All right. Unfortunately, again, we still can't specialize. So all of these speed-ups down to 12 squarings and 7 multiplications, we don't have. The current situation is 9 squarings and 16 multiplications, where there's something of an argument going on in the literature. There are some people who say, hey, if you chop your field size in half, then you're going to make it 4 times faster. And their reason for saying that is that arithmetic on n bits takes time n squared. And then other people say, if you chop your field size in half, you make it 3 times faster. Going from 255, 256 bits down to 128, 127 bits makes it 3 times faster. Thanks to Karatsuba, arithmetic takes time n to the log base 2 of 3 instead of m squared, which produces a 3 times speed up instead of 4 times speed up. Now, as I say at the bottom here, this n squared and the n to the log base 2 of 3, those are not reasonable numbers. What you should do to get reasonable numbers is look at real-world CPUs. I'm just for today, for lack of time, going to look at one CPU, the Pentium M, where if you want to do arithmetic quickly, you have to use floating point. The Pentium M can do one floating point operation at best every cycle, one floating point add or subtract or multiply every cycle. If you divide the number of floating point operations by the number of cycles, it's certainly less than or equal to 1. And if you really put work into your software, then it's always close to 1. Say 92%, 94%, 90% if you don't work hard, but you still know how to write good code. There's not much variation. It's not that the number of floating point operations equals the number of cycles, but the ratio is sufficiently close to constant that we don't have to worry about modeling number of cycles as number of floating point operations. For instance, at the bottom here, I've written for the curve 25519 speeds, 640,000 cycles. For those of you who think in terms of seconds for some reason, cycles are, of course, depending on your machine. You might have a 2 gigahertz Pentium M, which means 2 billion cycles per second. Or you might think about this number differently. I think if I calculated right, this is the time to do the isogeny hash of a 3-bit message. Those of us who actually work with optimized code don't do those kinds of translations. Cycles are meaningful mathematical objects. Once you have a model of what your computer does, then a cycle is a nice, simple, straightforward object, and converting it into something less straightforward by doing random multiplications or divisions just confuses the picture. A cycle is something sensible for people who are used to it. So I report all the speeds of cycles. Out of those cycles, 92% of them are doing floating point operations. So we can just count floating point operations in order to analyze cycles. I don't want to spend too long on the numbers here because I'm running short of time, but here's the number of floating point operations for addition and multiplication by a constant and squaring and general multiplication in this 255-bit field. And then to predict what kind of speed up you'll get from a 127-bit field, you have to understand where these numbers come from. And actually, all of these numbers are, well, the multiplication times at the end here and squaring, those are quadratic. There's no Karatsuba used in last year's records. The elements of the field, I worked with them in radix 2 to the 25.5 and represented each number here as a 10 coefficient polynomial. If your radix is the 10th root of your field size, then it makes sense you'd need 10 coefficients. And then the addition time is just linear in the number of polynomial coefficients. You do a polynomial addition to do a field addition. You might also think, oops, what about reductions and carries? But delay all of those. Certainly, we're about to do a multiplication. No reason to worry about doing the reductions after every field operation. So 10 operations, that's just the size of your field. That's what's creating the 10 operations for addition. And then multiplication, well, there's some quadratics here, which I'm not going to go through. But I also want to point out the linear terms, like the time for carrying inside, carrying integers, taking your top half of a product of some small integers and moving it to your next integer. This carrying is a pretty serious linear time, a linear term in the time for your multiplication. And even more serious than the squaring when you realize the squaring gets rid of a lot of the quadratic. Scaling the 10 down to 5 tells you, okay, it could drag you through all the numbers here, but I want to focus on the bottom line. The field addition is twice as fast if you work with 2 to the 127 minus 1 on the Pentium M. The number of operations for addition drops by a factor of 2, not 3 or 4. Well, okay, obviously addition scales linearly. Multiplication, it's not 3 or 4, it's 3.329. It takes 73 operations. Even though I was working with quadratic time arithmetic here, it's awfully close to a 3 for the speed up in multiplication. And squaring is even worse, well, or better, depending on your perspective, depending whether you're elliptic or hyper-elliptic. Is this better or worse? Well, anyway, squaring is 2.842 times faster, 57 operations instead of 162 for squaring in this half-size field. And again, let me emphasize that even with quadratic time arithmetic, you end up seeing something quite different from a 4-time speed-up for going to a smaller field, because there's all these linear additions to your arithmetic time. And when you really put effort into optimizing your multiplication speed for real CPUs, then you see a ton of these linear effects. The time for doing these carries becomes more and more dominant as you look at smaller and smaller numbers. So you really can't model these by a simple n squared. You can reasonably model them by the quadratics I've written down, and if you're going to write a paper counting number of operations, it's very easy to go through this calculation and just summarize these as polynomials for the time it takes to do polynomial multiplication and squaring and so on for small sizes. You do have to redo it for each machine, but it's easy from this to get what I claim is a realistic estimate. Okay, I haven't shown you the software speeds yet, and you might still be skeptical, but based on these numbers, you would reasonably guess that Gaudry is faster by a noticeable amount than Montgomery. Instead of the 8 additions that Montgomery has, Gaudry has quite a lot more, 32, but that's and those are things that only get sped up by a factor of 2 for the smaller field size, but that's a sufficiently small part of the total that it's wiped out by the improvements in multiplications. And you can see actually there's improvements at every part here except for the additions. The squarings are better, multiplications are better. The total is 1841 floating point operations instead of 1998. So if your code is in fact running with cycles divided by floating point operations being about constant, you would predict at this point that Gaudry will be faster than Montgomery, even without specialization. Depending on exactly how big your little a, little b, little c, little d, and so on are, you get quite different numbers for how fast specialized Gaudry is, but even the worst case, which I don't think we need, it's going to be quite a lot faster than the 1998, and if we can make the ABCDV really small, then you can skip some more carries and save quite a lot of time. This is really surprisingly fast. This is the, prediction. Does this hold up in practice? Well, get to that in a moment. This is the prediction for how fast a specialized Gaudry surface would be. And it could write the code at this point. I just don't know how to find a secure ABCD. This is, once we can do genus 2 point counting, this will definitely be faster than Montgomery, assuming that this floating point model is accurate. So is it? Well, I have some reciprocal stuff, which I'll skip in the interest of time, comments about changing your coordinates to get rid of some reciprocals. And of course, it's easier to do a reciprocal in 2 to the 127 minus 1 field than in 2 to the 255 minus 19. All right, after all the theoretical analysis, it's time to show you the software speed. I wonder how many people would believe me. You can download the code right now. I'll give you the URL on the next slide. And you can see it's about 4,000 lines of assembly language in the main loop. And I'm wondering how many people would believe me if I said that I wrote the code this last weekend. It's only 4,000 lines of assembly language. Wow. I certainly have. I totally agree with Dan Page that the compiler tools are a critical part of getting cryptographic software actually written in a reasonable amount of time. Programmer time is something very important to optimize. And I've got my own tools to try to save my own time in writing these things, and I certainly would not want to write those 4,000 lines of assembly language without it. And anyway, it made it practical for me to at least complete an implementation in time for this talk. And, it's got some comments here on how I'm stopping timing attacks. This is all what the cryptographer wants. There's no input-dependent branches. Very easy to do in Montgomery ladders and Gaudry form surfaces as well. No input-dependent indices. That costs a little bit, but stops cache timing attacks. The operation here on these Coomer surfaces is you're given n, given p. The rules of the game allow pre-computation for n, but not bothering, no apparent speed-up, and then compute as an output n times p. The coordinates are some inverted projective coordinates, 1 over x, 1 over y, 1 over z, 1 over t, and then move the x up top. This on the slides I skipped, I explained why those are best coordinates for saving divisions, and then I'm allowing arbitrary A, B, C, D. Time is independent. They can be as large as you want, within the field. You feed them into the software, and it will do the scalar multiplication for you. So how fast is this? Well, I'm just about to tell you, really. I promise this time. The competition here for elliptic curves, curve 25519, runs in 640,000 cycles. And I'm pleased to announce that Genus 2 is faster. 580,000 cycles. So this is the new speed record for Diffie-Hellman. Of course, I haven't even gone through the work of CM and generating some secure surface. That's something that I think we can do. But, well, right now, I guess the rest of the slide is saying, okay, I think even though it's faster, even though Gaudry surfaces with arbitrary ABCD, random ABCD are faster, and we could make some random ABCDs that that give us a secure surface of this form and then use those, and it would be faster than what we get from elliptic curves. I think it's silly compared to specialized Gaudry form surfaces, which should be quite a lot faster than this. I imagine instead of this 10%, maybe 15% speed up, we could get something like a 40% speed up from a specialized surface. So I think it makes sense to not have an intermediate standard, not worry about generating a good surface of this form, but to do genus 2 point counting. Is Nikki actually here? There she is. Okay, hiding for some reason. Well, so hopefully the genus 1 Sklof original algorithm records will have some analogous genus 2 records coming up, and hopefully it'll be fast enough that we'll be able to do genus 2 point counting sometime reasonably soon. And then having some tiny ABCDs can write software for those, which will be quite a lot faster than the software that I have now. All right. Last slide, advertising. Part one of Elliptic versus Hyperelliptic was brought to you by eBay, a secret benchmarking of asymmetric systems, which those of you who managed to miss the rump session might somehow not know that this is measuring the time and space for public key signing, encryption, secret sharing, and maybe future versions of it will do identity-based encryption and so on. Go to ecrypt.eu.org/ebats. Thank you.